With political polarization seemingly at an all-time high, it would appear as though Americans are divided by clear left versus right divisions. But according to our guest this hour, former presidential candidate Ralph Nader, this isn't the case. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ralph Nader says our apparent divisions are artificial constructs of the corporate state, when really there are progressives and conservatives and libertarians who share plenty of common ground. We'll talk about that common ground and reforms that Nader says the left-right alliance can achieve, and we will welcome your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Ralph Nader is an author, lecturer, attorney, political activist, and four-time candidate for President of the United States. His latest book is Unstoppable: The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, so what do you mean that that this is an artificial construct of the corporate state, our political divisiveness that we witness?
Well, the divide and rule strategy throughout history has been to take groups that give themselves different labels, like liberal and conservative, and get them to focus on where they really disagree. Like in this country, they disagree maybe on reproductive rights, on gun control, on taxes, etc. And to divert them from the major areas where they do agree. And this book is about where left and right do agree to change the country in ways that would reduce the power of the corporate Goliaths over government and Wall Street, and put the country on a better path for improvement of its people and its descendants. Now, here, for example, and I've done a lot of work on this over the years, for example, left-right public opinion back home is largely opposed to corporate welfare and corporate bailouts, especially the big Wall Street bailout. They want to amend the Patriot Act because of its restrictions on civil liberties and dragnet snooping by the government. They want to revise the trade agreements, which were constructed by corporate lobbyists and their government allies, NAFTA and WTO, because it's led to a huge net job drain from the U.S., and because it is unacceptably abridging our local, state, and national sovereignty. They want to get tough on corporate crime. If you ask people around the country, are you upset that no Wall Street mogul was prosecuted for this crash on the economy? They will come, 90% will say there should have been prosecution, there should be tougher enforcement on corporate crime. There's a very broad consensus that investors and shareholders should have more power over their corporations, especially executive pay and disclosure. That one comes in very, very high as well. Now, in some areas, Joy, it's actually going operational. There are three areas. At the state level, over a dozen states have passed laws on juvenile justice reform and taking another look on the war on drugs. And that could only happen by a liberal conservative alliance in the state legislature. In Congress, it's starting to seep on the minimum wage. Minimum wage increase comes in 70-80% in this country. That means there's a lot of conservatives among workers who want to restore the minimum wage. And at the state and local level, they're beginning to pass higher minimum wages than the federal government's minimum wage, which has been frozen at $7.25 an hour. And it's starting to get into the Congress now, and it'll be an issue in November. And then the third area where it's going operational is the increasing demand for more voices and choices on the ballot. Libertarians and Green Party, lots of people who don't put labels on themselves, think that it's unfair to have the two parties to dominate the electoral scene and gerrymander districts right down to the state legislative level, where the party in charge, Republican or Democrat, of the state government picks the voters instead of the reverse, which is the voters should pick the the candidates.
Well, what makes you say, Ralph Nader, that this left-right alliance is unstoppable?
Because it's a majority alliance. And when you get to 70-80% in the polls, and sometimes 90%, that's pretty unstoppable if it can move in the following stages. It starts with, you know, agreement. That's what public opinion polls say. What do you think about this? So you start with a 70-80% agreement. That's got to include a lot of left-right people, voters, citizens. Then you move, so when this opinion starts getting vocal, whether by emails to Congress or your state legislatures, whether by marches or demonstrations, then you get the press. The press sort of likes this story. They often start like, odd bedfellows today, march down, or, you know, unlikely duos, mm-hmm. and so forth. Once that second stage is reached and the media starts covering it, then it gets the attention of the legislators and the regulators and whatever, the people who make the decisions for us. And I see that in the past so overwhelmingly decisive, Joy, that it's real confirmation of this point I made in this book, Unstoppable. For example, last year there was a drive to get us involved in the war in Syria. And it went up to Congress for authorization for the president. And the emails that came in were 60 to 100 to 1. It was a enormous telephone calls, emails, and it was stopped cold. Just about a year ago, liberals and conservatives in the House of Representatives defied their own leadership, Speaker John Boehner, Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, and just missed by a few votes passing a bill in the House to stop the NSA from dragnet snooping on the American people. We passed over a year ago against corporate lobbyists who fought tooth and nail and actually delayed the bill, the whistleblowers bill, to give federal employees more protections to blow the whistle on corporate fraud on the taxpayer, like fraud on Medicare, fraud on the defense contracts, and so forth. You see, when it starts, and there are other examples in the book, when it starts, it really is unstoppable.
Yeah, and what makes you say, though, that the corporate state, if they've been successful in dividing us or you know, putting the spotlight on our differences, isn't going to fight this tooth and nail?
They are going to. But once we get a sense of our own unified power, the strategy is simply to put these issues on the table of candidates and legislators. Once it gets on the table, the reason why single payer is not discussed, even though a majority of the American people since Harry Truman days supported full Medicare for all, everybody in, nobody out, free choice of doctor and hospital, very efficient, much more in the present wasteful system, even though that is the status in terms of the public opinion, it's not on the table. The Republicans and Democrats, when they were fighting over Obamacare, took it off the table. Mr. Obama wouldn't even discuss it, even though earlier he said he favored full Medicare, but, you know, you can't fight the corporate powers. Now, when it's not on the table, the press doesn't cover it. So, and when the press doesn't cover it, you don't see the polls, you don't see the politicians having to take positions. So our job is to put it on the table, yeah, and make sure that these things start to happen. You just had a report in Wisconsin on this contract. I just heard it a few minutes ago, the venture capital contract. Well, it so happens that there's left-right support that started when I met with Mitch Daniels, Bush's director of office management, OMB, who became governor of Indiana. And I said, why don't you put all these government contracts online, so that you can get better quality competition, you can get taxpayer oversight, you can get media coverage, you get academic analysis. You have $500 billion of government contracts. Put them online. He said, that's a great idea. Anyway, he went back to Indiana, and he put all the Indiana state contracts online. Texas now is putting them online, and you have maybe 8-9 states. And that happens only because of a liberal conservative alliance in the state legislature.
I wanted to get your reaction to a blogger who said, Ralph Nader wants you to vote for Rand Paul for president. Don't do it. Is that what you want?
See, this is a totally false rumor. This is the peril of the internet age, Joy. It's a totally false rumor for people either who want to derail this kind of dialogue and discourse, or for people who think too categorically. What I said was, Rand Paul is terrible on federal health and safety environmental legislation. He is opposed to full Medicare for all. He's got a lot of bad positions domestically, but he has two areas where he has very good positions, and some of them are quite courageously advocated on the Senate floor by Rand Paul. One, he's against empire abroad and unconstitutional wars. And two, he wants to preserve our civil liberties and rights of privacy. So those are two pretty important things. So what do you do with Rand Paul? You say, I don't want to have anything to do with Rand Paul because he doesn't want regulation of the safety of the auto industry or air and water pollution. No, what you do is you say, look, there is a left-right alliance here. We have a champion on these two very important areas in the Senate, someone who's actually willing to go on the Senate floor and talk for 13 hours to highlight the illegal drone attacks overseas. Why not support that? That's the way we have to operate in this country, because spouses don't agree on everything. People who are close friends don't agree on everything. And we simply can't marginalize each other just because we don't agree on ABC when we all agree on WXYZ issues.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton or hypothetically Jeb Bush, do they stand for anything here on your reform agenda?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure some of them support. I'm sure both of them now support solar energy. Is a left-right coalition on solar energy. The Koch brothers are trying to lobby in state legislatures to put a surtax on your solar panels on your home under the net metering of selling back solar power excess to the electric company. And guess what? They're losing. The oil and gas industry is now losing because there are no such things as Republican or Democrat solar panels. And there are legislators in these states who are saying, look, this is an industry that's creating a lot of jobs. It's one of the fastest growing industries in California, for example. But this isn't about elections, Joy. This is about changing incumbent legislators' positions by an overwhelming swarm of public opinion reflecting left-right. There's nothing that unresponsive lawmakers and corporate lobbyists fear more than a left-right alliance, because they know it's decisive. It gives cover to the politicians. It comes in at very high public opinion rates, and it is unstoppable. I've seen this happen again and again, and they're terrified by it.
We are talking with Ralph Nader. His latest book is Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. And we welcome your reaction to what he has to say. Do you think that liberals and conservatives are not all that divided when it comes to some important issues like civil liberties, concern over growing corporate power, unfair free trade agreements? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you see this common ground between the left and the right? And do you think that is a movement that is unstoppable? Can we change the positions of politicians on these issues? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with Ralph Nader this hour about his new book, Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. And we're welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Ralph Nader in the book has some 25 proposed redirections and reforms that he believes this left-right alliance can accomplish, and we'll talk about more of those as we go along. But we have a tweet from Ahmed who says, what structural reform would you advocate? Anything beyond elections, Ralph Nader?
Yes, well, one that there's a heavy left-right support for is to spread the concept of initiative referendum recall, direct democracy. So when the lawmakers are looking the other way and not respecting the people's necessities and taking money from commercial and other interests, the issue goes down to initiative referendum recall. There are about 22 states that have it at the state level. But east of the Mississippi, it's not that frequent. There is the New England town meeting, which is local in New England. It's my area, and that has worked very well. That has to be paired with campaign finance reform. Now, the left-right thinks that money's corrupting politics. They can't agree on the way to turn it around because they haven't spent enough time together discussing it. I favor people starting up committees of correspondence apropos the pre-revolutionary period in our country when the farmers in Massachusetts took on King George. This is before the fighting started. In 1774, they organized committees of correspondence. There was no chair. It was a way that they got together on common ground. And that's what we've got to get this ball rolling, because if we're going to be pressed to focus on our differences, and not to focus on major areas, which are structural as well as substantive policy, we will not see the full potential of turning this country around when there's already an existing majority of opinion in one area after another to do that.
Jake in Menasha is with us. Hello, Jake.
Good morning. Ralph, I've been a supporter of yours for many, many, many years, and the Green Party as well. I actually ordered your book 2 days ago from Amazon, and they shipped it 2 days ago. So I'm looking forward to reading it. I also would like you to mention that your last year's book, Told You So, the big book of weekly columns, which I have in front of me. I picked it up at the library the other day, and it's just phenomenal how you predicted all these things with right, left, back 20, 25, 30 years ago. So could you talk a little bit about last year's book as well as...
Yeah, and that was a book of my columns, and the thing that got me started on this really was we were fighting the Clinch River Breeder Reactor boondoggle in Tennessee. This was funded by the taxpayer, support, you know, lobbied through by Westinghouse, General Electric, and other suppliers, and this was the kind of nuclear reactor supposed to breed its own energy. And it was going to be situated on the Clinch River in Tennessee. They'd already spent $1.3 billion. They hadn't even put a shovel into the ground, and the projection was then that it was going to cost up to $8 billion. So we're fighting this to turn it around and stop it in Congress, and we're not getting it anywhere other than with, you know, maybe several dozen members of the House and Senate, because Mr. Reagan was for the Clinch River, the powerful Senator Howard Baker, Republican in the Senate, was. He was from Tennessee. Then Senator Bumpers called us up and said, why don't you connect with these conservative groups? You know, this is wasting a lot of taxpayer money. We did that, and in a stunning defeat, we won in the Senate 56-40 and ended that boondoggle project. And I said to myself, you know, this is we can do more of this. Well, 3 years later, a bill called the Federal False Claims Act was passed. It saved taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. And what it does is it protects government whistleblowers who blow waste, you know, who blow the whistle on corporate waste, fraud, and abuse. And that got through against corporate lobbyists. Obviously, they didn't like it. That got through quite readily because Senator Grassley, Republican, Iowa, got together with Congressman Howard Berman, Democrat, California, and enacted it. So there's a lot of precedent for this, but we have to feel our own power. We can't simply say, I can't stand each other. I can't stand these people. You know, they're right-wingers, they're left-wingers. But when it comes down to where people live and work and raise their families, a lot of these ideological splits that are used to control people at a general abstract level dissipate, and people really focus on the situation at hand, very practically.
Yeah, and why did you write the book now? I mean, is there something different now?
Well, the difference is what the media is talking about all the time. Paralysis, gridlock, can't get anything done, what's wrong with our country? You know, I come from a town where there was a flood in 1955, and it washed away 5 bridges. They rebuilt the bridges in 1 year. Now there's a bridge in the town that needs to be rebuilt, and they say it's going to take 4 to 5 years. We're not repairing America. We are blowing up countries overseas and infrastructure and whatever overseas, Afghanistan, Iraq, elsewhere. We are not building America. And there's a huge left-right coalition, and this includes the local chamber of commerce and the local unions, to put money into repairing not just the proverbial highways and bridges, but the sewage and water infrastructure that's deteriorating under our roads. It's to rebuild and modernize our libraries, our community health clinics, our public transit. These create real jobs, good-paying jobs that cannot be exported. There's a huge left-right coalition. But Wall Street is not interested in that. They're interested in parking trillions of dollars abroad and not paying their fair share of taxes and speculating with our savings and pension funds. And when they crash the economy, they don't get prosecuted. And some of them actually get promoted, and a lot of them stay rich. So this is a lot about joy, about Main Street against Wall Street. Who's going to control the political economy? Is it going to be back home, or is it going to be multinational corporations that have no allegiance to our country? They roam the world in looking for cheap labor, for dictators they can bribe, and they have no interest in our country other to control it or to, like, deregulate or to ship jobs and industries overseas to autocratic regimes who know how to keep their 80 cents an hour workers in their place.
Tom in Johnson Creek is with us now. Hello, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. It's an honor to speak with you, Mr. Nader. I've been following you for a lot of years. When I heard the conversation this morning, I just couldn't believe it because so much of what you've articulated so well is many of the things that I've believed for a long time. I think there is a huge, huge block of Republicans, independents, Democrats, progressives, you know, whatever label you want to put on them. I think they really do believe a lot of the same things. The reason I'm calling is a lot of what you're talking about reminds me of a group that I believe is still in existence in Washington called No Labels. And I'm wondering if you're familiar with them and if you feel they're having any success getting Republicans and Democrats working together, talking together.
I don't see them focusing on the areas that I've described. They may be focusing on deficit financing. They may be focusing on trying to cut back what they call entitlements. The word entitlements is very irritating because when people pay into Social Security and Medicare, that they've paid for some, if not a lot, of that money they're going to get back. That's not entitlements. The entitlements are corporate welfare. They're not going after the corporate subsidy state, you know, the hundreds of billions of dollars that Washington ladles out in terms of free research and development, subsidies, bailouts, handouts, giveaways, you know, you name it. I'm not that impressed by that group. They don't deal with challenging raw power of corporations. They don't deal with shift of power from the few to the many in democratic institutions. I do think, however, that in rethinking the war on drugs and prison sentences, long sentences for small possession, for example, marijuana, is starting because of left-right support. It started years ago when the progressive mayor of Baltimore and Milton Friedman, the conservative economist, and George Will and others came out saying, we got to rethink this war on drugs.
Let's take another call. Thank you, Tom. Richard in Chippewa Falls. Hello, Richard.
Good morning. First off, I want to say, Ralph, I appreciate your body of work. You remind me of the line in Leonard Cohen's song Anthem, "You're the light where the crack, or the crack where the light gets in." I'm someone who's strongly been in one corner for my whole political aware life. And I just think this is an amazing, pragmatic approach. And how do you make and take those baby steps to really reach across the aisle? People say that all the time, but they don't ever do it.
Well,
thank you for this.
Yeah, in my book, I don't sugarcoat the obstacles. I go through them one by one. I talk about what inhibits us left-right from collaborating with each other. I have a section called A Dear Billionaire, a letter to some billionaire who will help establish institutions that exclusively deal with convergence of left-right to go forward and change the country for the better. Having said that, I was talking recently with Ron Paul, who's retired in Texas now, and he is a strong believer in convergence. Now, again, I don't agree with him on the health and safety regulation, et cetera. We put those aside, and we focus on the big issues like war and peace, empire, Wall Street. He uses the word corporatism again and again. I never thought I'd hear a libertarian or a conservative use the word corporatism. What is corporatism? It's a belief by people in power that corporations really should manage our political economy, that they should plan our energy, our tax system, our food system. They should control our government, finance our elections, plan our whole political economy. And he's dead set against that. So it's now to go operational. So it isn't just a verbal agreement. We've got to sense our own collaborative power, which is unstoppable, and start making these agreements on issue after issue visible. We could have demonstrations. We could have marches. We could have collaborative public statements, enough so that the press catches it. So it isn't just, you know, opinion. It's action. And the press catches it. And then if it gets on the table of the electoral process, if they start talking about it, or it gets on the table of the incumbents in the legislature, it's off to the races. It'll be very, very hard to stop. Because once people sense that they can get together with other people who they have disagreed with on other issues, they have a sense of power and achievement. They get a morale boost, and one victory leads to another. When the Supreme Court said that the town of New London in Connecticut could condemn a whole neighborhood of houses, destroy them, and then give the land to Pfizer Corporation, that was a 5-4 decision with four liberals. 22 state legislatures, in a matter of months, passed laws that said, no, you're not going to have the state eminent domain condemn private property and give it to corporate property. You can condemn it to give it for bridges and highways and so on, public purpose, but not to give it to a corporate property.
Yeah.
And that only happened because of left-right alliances in those state legislatures. And look how fast it happened.
Can you, I guess, generally address his desire, apparently, as someone who said he was firmly in one political corner, to reach out to get somebody in the opposite political corner to work on some of these issues? Or what should he do if he wants to lead some of this convergence?
Well, just find the people who disagree with him on ABC issues. We know what they are. And get agreement on some of the issues described in this book and some we've just talked about in the last half hour, and start a committee of correspondence. Why do I say that? Because that has a patriot ring to it. It's a pre-revolutionary way that the patriots organized themselves very loosely, you know, no hierarchy, but they kept in touch with one another. And now, of course, we can keep in touch with one another through the internet and many other ways much more quickly and efficiently. And once you do that, you start a letterhead a group, committees of correspondence, and you start contacting your state legislature in Madison and in Washington on these issues. And you say, we want action here. We are left-right. The minute you say left-right, it catches the attention of these legislators, because left-right to them means majority, and it gives them cover to do the right thing back home. So you have to read this book in order to see how the past, present, and future dynamics can work here. It's a very practical book. It's a short book. And I wrote it not sugarcoating, as I said, the obstacles. A lot of the obstacles are in our heads, because when we fight with people on matters that are dear to us, we can't conceive of cooperating with them on matters where they agree with us. That's the main hurdle we have to get over.
One of the 25 proposed reforms on your list, you have 25, and we can't go through every single one, and you've mentioned it before, but it's adjust the minimum wage to inflation. So what we're thinking here is that people on the left and the right, maybe even Occupy and the Tea Party, are both on the same page on this.
They are. That comes in. Restoring the minimum wage to what it was in 1968, adjusted for inflation, would take it over $10 an hour, and the federal minimum wage is $7.25 frozen. It comes in at 70 to 80%, depending on the poll, support. Well, that is clearly a left-right alliance. I mean, conservative workers in southern Walmart stores don't say to themselves, well, I'm conservative, I want to stay at $8 an hour. They want to feed their families. They want to provide the necessities. And so, surprisingly to some, but not to those of us who've been watching this convergence evolve, we have people like Rick Santorum told Chris Matthews during his run for the presidency that he's always been for the minimum wage. Even Mitt Romney, before he changed in the primary, was a longtime supporter of the minimum wage as governor of Massachusetts. Phyllis Schlafly, very conservative in Missouri, came out for the minimum wage increase. Ron Unz was trying to put a referendum in California to raise it to $12 an hour, saying it would relieve the drain on taxpayer money because people who get a more living wage don't have to get housing assistance or food stamps. So you can see, sometimes they agree, Joy, on an issue like minimum wage, but for different reasons. Yeah. The conservatives may want it because it reduces the burden on the taxpayer in terms of social services, and the progressives want it because it provides the necessities for 30 million people who now are making less. Can you believe this? 30 million people, workers, are making less today than workers made in 1968, adjusted for inflation. That's the gap between $7 and a quarter, although some states have a little higher, $7 and a quarter and $10.50.
We are talking with Ralph Nader. He is the author of many books. He's a lecturer, an attorney, a political activist, as a former candidate for president. His latest book is Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. And we welcome your questions for him. Are you concerned about the corporate state? Do you believe that individuals can band together across political divides to dismantle corporatism? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Ralph Nader, author of Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. And our next caller is Mark in Rockton. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, Joy. Mr. Nader, I have great respect for you and would like to vote for you. I really buy your populist rhetoric that does cut across party line, but here's the problem. The two parties really have a lockhold on this marketplace that we call an election. If you run as an independent, you're going to be running against both parties. There's about a 30% yellow dog Democrat vote and a 30% yellow dog Republican vote. It seems to me, I don't think I can vote for you, I'm sorry, but if you run in one of the partisan primaries, and it's probably more logical for you to run as a Democrat because many of your values are aligned not with the current corporate Democrats, but more with the FDR, Harry Truman Democratic Party. Mm. If you ran in, let me finish. If you ran in the partisan primary and you actually won, you would get a 30% base regardless of what your policies are. And the problem is that if we vote for you, one, a Democrat or a Republican is going to win. And I really appreciate your romantic vision and your spot on the issues. The problem is the fix is in, and we've got to deal with it.
You're right. The two parties are a two-party tyranny. They dial for the same commercial dollars. They're becoming more alike than they have been in prior decades. But this isn't about elections. This is about changing the minds of incumbents, regardless of whether they're Republicans and Democrats. When the Federal Communications Commission issued a rule a few years ago allowing large media companies to control more radio, TV stations, and newspapers in an area, the protest from the public so stunned the Congress, and it came in from people who belonged to the NRA, who belonged to Common Cause. The protest, it wasn't organized, it was just outrage. The House of Representatives voted 390 votes out of 435 to overrule the FCC. And they were about to get the same thing in the Senate, but the Senate stretched it out and, because of its rules, dissipated this protest. But it shows you who in the world would ever have thought that members of the House of Representatives, who are scared stiff of the big media, especially conservative Republicans, would vote to overrule the Federal Communications Commission. So this is between elections. Eventually, the left-right will move to clean up the elections, have more competitive elections, more voices and choices, get rid of the gerrymander, one-party domination, and challenge the money in politics, all the things that you're alluding to. But right now, we're talking about either spontaneous communication, left-right, to legislators, the kind of thing that changed the eminent domain that I just talked about in 22 state legislatures, or a more organized committee of correspondents to get it going on areas that are not yet on the table. See, the whole thing is to get these issues on the table. Once you get it on the table, the politicians have to campaign on it. They have to take a position, whether you like it or not. They do have to take a position. Then we're off to the races. If you don't get it on the table, it doesn't get discussed, it doesn't get polled, it doesn't reach talk radio, it just is shoved aside.
Yeah. So are you planning on running for president in 2016?
No. But I have left open this point on being on the table and off the table, Joy, is very important. I've left open my website from 2008. It's votenator.org, and it has 18 issues that the Republicans and Democrats took off the table. They never discussed it. Like, they didn't discuss minimum wage in 2008. They didn't discuss full Medicare for all. They didn't discuss cracking down, getting tough on corporate crime. They took it off the table, and I put it on the table on my campaign. And just go and look at it. If they take it off the table, it's not debated. It's not discussed. If it's not discussed and debated by the candidates, the press is likely not to cover it, and the public doesn't know what's going on this issue. So even though when you poll them, they are very supportive of these issues. These are majoritarian issues, but they don't know where the candidates stand because they've both taken it off the table. We got to have more than two candidates. And many, ballots, you just have one candidate, essentially, the gerrymandered, dominant Republican or Democratic candidate. I mean, we're down now where we don't even have a two-party system in the majority of congressional and state legislative districts. It's all either Democrat or Republican, slam dunk win, gerrymandered.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing some of that in Wisconsin. I did want to ask you about how the trend that we're seeing in Wisconsin and other states where more conservative Republicans are challenging more moderate Republicans in the elections because the moderates aren't conservative enough, how that plays into this left-right alliance?
Well, you see, that's very murky because a lot of these rabid Tea Party candidates, they're supporting subjects that we liberal progressive would disagree on. But they're never given an opportunity to talk about the issues that I've just mentioned, the convergence. So if you ask a Tea Party, and you remember that when the Tea Party people met with the Occupy New York people once, they said, hey, we agree on Wall Street, too much power, not enough law enforcement, too much bailouts. Hey, we really don't like the Patriot Act. The right-wing Texas Republican state platform of 2002, I mean, you couldn't get one more right-wing. They came out against the Patriot Act. They said the war on terror should never be a pretext for suppressing our civil liberties and freedoms. They came out against the sovereignty-shredding NAFTA and WTO corporate trade agreements. So right now, no, the contests are about, you know, they're about areas of disagreement, not about areas of agreement. Mm-hmm. This book, Unstoppable, let's be very candid. This book, Unstoppable, is designed for readers, thinkers, doers who are really serious about our country's future. I mean, that's what it is. We really got to get serious. We have too much of an entertainment culture, 24/7 sports, comedies, etc. We have very little serious news. You get a lot of it on public radio, of course, but generally speaking, we have got to develop a serious strain in our culture where we really pay attention to a nation called the USA that has more problems than it deserves and more solutions on the shelf that it doesn't apply, because there is such a democracy gap reflected in the power of the few over the many.
Let's take another call from Samuel in Milwaukee. Hi, Samuel.
Hey, how you doing, Joy? And it's an honor to speak with you, Mr. Nader. I try as a reasonable moderate to I use PopVox so I can stay up on all of the bills that are in Congress and you know, send emails directly to my representatives on how I feel about those issues and why. But what I seem to notice is that people, and it's a human trait, people always will vote in their self-interest and in the interest in self-preservation. So, you know, people making minimum wage will vote for whoever wants to increase minimum wage. People who own a big business or work in a big corporate environment will vote for who will support that. And what I seem to see is most issues on both sides that people cause people to vote Democrat or government, both result in bigger government that negatively affects all the other issues that affect everyone's lives. How do you get through to people to look at more than just singular issues that affect their right now life?
Well, they're entitled to do that. I mean, that's what does the quality of life. You know, I mean, it's, if you're making $8 an hour, you're a single mom. I mean, you know, you can be forgiven wanting to at least make as much as a single mom made in 1968, adjusted for inflation. So I don't mind that. I mean, that's really what bread and butter politics are all about. There's too much power seeking special interests for the rich and powerful, and not for the general interest of the people. That's the switch we have to get to. The second thing is, I think if we focus on children and grandchildren, what our founding fathers called posterity, the descendants, when we focus on them, and if we preserve a society that for their well-being, it almost automatically improves the well-being of people today. And so that's a nice magnet to try to attain.
Thanks, Samuel, for the call. We have many other callers, but before we run out of time, Ralph Nader, what on your list of changes that you think the left-right alliance can accomplish, which one needs to be done first, or is one of the most important?
Well, I think one of the most important ones is to law enforcement against corporate crime, fraud, and abuse. It's just running wild, draining the taxpayer, fraud on the government, Medicare, military contracts. It's fraud on consumers, tying consumers up in knots now with these fine print contracts and charges and penalties and gouging. The healthcare industry is still causing a lot of harm, not only economic harm, but by denying care, et cetera. It's keeping people from getting diagnosed and treated in time. The Harvard Medical School report shows 45,000 Americans a year die from that, 800 a week. So the other, of course, it has to be conversion to solar energy, wind power, and energy efficiency. We've got to replace fossil fuels and nuclear. It's more decentralized down into the neighborhoods. The solar panel movement is moving faster and faster. And we have great ways to reduce the use of energy and get more work out of less energy for motor vehicles, for lighting, for heating, and other uses. Of course, the one area that there isn't enough convergence about is the campaign finance reform issue. They both agree something must be done. We've got to get together and start finding ways, policies that will actually get it done. The important thing is the sense of our own left-right power. Once that starts, then people can pick and choose the areas that they want to push. I was debating Ronald Reagan years ago, Joy, and I got him to agree that he doesn't like corporate welfare. But when he was in president, he allowed corporate welfare because there wasn't this left-right rumble from the people articulate and moving into an operational mode to connect with his right ideology but his wrong political positions. And the same with, I was debating Milton Friedman years ago, and he doesn't like regulation of any kind. I said, any kind? How about pollution, where you can't smell, see, and taste it, but it can cause cancer? He then said, I think we should have regulation of pollution. You see, there is this broad right, but it has to go operational. We have to start either a flurry of protests, the way I just described, coming in on Congress, where they say, wow, this is left-right. We got to do something about this. Or it's more organized in committees of correspondence. So if you want an autographed copy of the book for a friend to get the discussion going or to give it to a library, just go to nader.org. I really want to see this become a subject of discussion. We're going to have a session at the Cato Institute. I mean, just look at this. The longtime head of the Cato Libertarian Institute in Washington, he told me, and I have this in the book, he said, Ralph, I oppose all corporate subsidies, unconstitutional wars, civil liberty-destroying Patriot Act, and the Federal Reserve running amok. I said, that's a pretty good start.
Well, you know, now we have just a minute to go. You're optimistic that we're going to see big changes with this unstoppable alliance.
Yes, because it's already there in people's minds, in people's talk. There is a left-right. We must not allow ourselves to be divided and ruled. Yes, we disagree on other issues, but we agree on major issues of shift of power, major issues of Main Street versus Wall Street, and major issues that relate to the allocation of resources in this country. And that's a pretty good start. And maybe we'll start agreeing on other issues that we think we disagree on because we never sit down around the table and hash things out. We have stereotyped ourselves so severely and divided ourselves. But that's what the corporatists want, and we shouldn't let them do that. Corporations were chartered by state governments years ago to be our servants, not our masters. These giant corporations have become our masters. We've got to change it.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. Thank
Ralph
you.
Nader is the author of Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and to Bill Martins for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.